All right, so when we last left our heroes, we were discussing Mavi Goel Ivnevenehem, so that Hashem brings a Goel for their children, they being the Avos, and we discussed last week a little bit about, we were discussing Zocher Chas de Avos, and how that ties in to Goel Ivnevenehem. So just kind of pick up from there, just going to state from the beginning here that I'm actually going to go a tiny bit out of order for two reasons. The main reason is because one of the points that I want to talk about, Lama'an Shemo Be'ava, so the idea of Lama'an Shemo, so I really want to talk about on its own because it's a little bit of a larger idea, so I'm going to skip that for tonight and we'll cover it next time. And the side benefit of that is that we will therefore get to Zachreinu L'chaim, which is the addition that we add in for Rosh Hashanah and the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. So we will hopefully, Be'ezrat Hashem, get to that tonight and be able to get that in before Rosh Hashanah. So we're talking about Zocher Chas de Avos, Mevi Goel Ivnei V'nehem. So the Maharal says, and the Tur says the same thing, that Hashem, that the flow of these lines, or the way to read these lines, is that there one is a result of the other. That because Hashem is Zocher Chas de Avos, because he remembers the Chasadim of the Avos, therefore Mevi Goel Ivnei V'nehem. Therefore he brings a redeemer for their descendants. So you think about this as a very counterintuitive kind of statement. Now, how does this work? Seemingly, it's not in our best interests to be mentioning the greatness of our ancestors. It's counterintuitive that Hashem, remembering the Avos, should cause him to bring the Redeemer for us. From one perspective, on one hand, that it seems to, you know, comparatively blow the curve. You know, if Hashem is remembering the Avos, so now suddenly it's, you know, us compared to the Avos, and, you know, who are we compared to the Avos? It makes us seem much less impressive. If Hashem is Zocher Chas de Avos, he remembers the Avos, and they were so great, and now look at us. So why should we deserve a Goel after Hashem is, you know, remembering the Avos? It should, you know, be nostalgia and remembering, you know, Zechor Yamos Olam, and remembering how, you know, the good old days. And secondly, it seemingly gives us a higher standard. You know, someone who doesn't come from such lofty roots, such a pedigree, could have, you know, some justification of, you know, I'm not coming from the greatest of places. You can't have such high expectations of me. But if Hashem remembers the Avos, he remembers that our Avos were the great people that they were. Seemingly gives us a higher standard that we don't have any excuse to, that we didn't know any better. Look where we came from. Look at the Masorah that we have, and that seemingly should be less of a reason why we should be zoche to the bias goel, to the coming of the geula. It seemingly puts us should put us on a harder position. So,
unless you think of it differently, unless you think of it that he made a promise to the avos, and whatever they did. But he made a promise to them, and he's fulfilling that promise.
Okay, so it's certainly a valid perspective. I guess you have to understand in that perspective two things. Why Hashem didn't bring the Goel for the Avos themselves, and secondly, you know, what the, I guess, moral justification is of why, because the Avos did something great, so why we should be Zocha, why we should deserve the redemption because of what they did. But it certainly, you know, is at least a starting point that it's because of what Hashem promised to the Avos that therefore he would bring the Geula for his children, for their children. So I'm going to talk about a slightly different perspective. The Medrash says that by Yetzias Mitzrayim, that when Klal Yisrael called out by the Yam Suf, and Hashem was going to answer them and split open the sea for them. So the Midas Adin was Mekatrig. The Midah of judgment came and was accusing Klal Yisrael. And the Midas Adin said that Ma bin Elu Elu says, you know, what's the difference between the Mitzrim and Klal Yisrael? That these ones you're bringing them Besoch Hayam Beyabasha, and these ones Tuba'u Beyamsuf, these ones are going through in dry land, and these ones you're drowning. Elu Ovdei Avodah Zarah Ve'elu, Halal Ovdei Avodah Zarah Ve'halal Ovdei Avodah Zarah. These ones did Avodah Zarah, these ones also did Avodah Zarah. These ones did, it goes through a list of, you know, all the Averus that, you know, the Klal Yisrael did when they were in Mitzrayim, just like the Mitzrim did. So what exactly is the, why should you be punishing them and saving them? So Kadosh Baruch Hu responds to them that Elu B'nei Avram Yitzchak V'Yaakov, because these are the descendants of Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. We were redeemed from Mitzrayim, seemingly we were saved because we were their banim, because we're their descendants, and therefore we deserved to be saved. At the same time, there's another medrash that says that we were saved b'schus shlosha dvarim nigalu avoseinu Mitzrayim, that they're in the schus of three things that our ancestors were saved in Mitzrayim. It's a shaloshinu es shemam ves malbusha ves lashonu ves malbusham, that they didn't change their names and they didn't change their language and didn't change their clothing. So which one was it? The Klal Yisrael saved because of our lineage, or were they saved because of the customs that they kept? So the answer would seemingly is that it's both. That because they didn't change, because they kept their Jewish identity, because, like we say in the Haggadah, that the Melamed Shebnei Yisrael Mitzuyim Sham, that the Klal Yisrael, they stuck out, they were different. You could identify, you could readily see who was a Jew when you looked at the Jews in Mitzrayim, because even if they didn't have a Torah, and even if they weren't on the highest levels, but you could see these are the Jewish people. They didn't change. They kept their Jewish identity, and they still had a connection to the Avos. And because they still had that connection to the Avos, they were still called their banim. They were still called their children. Chazal tell us that Klal Yisrael, at the end of their enslavement in Mitzrayim, were on the 49th level of Tumah. And they're on the brink of descending to the 50th level of Tumah. And had they descended that last iota, they would have been absorbed into Egyptian society. They would have become indistinguishable as Bnei Avraham. And therefore, they had this last vestige of their connection to their heritage, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeemed them at exactly that moment, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Chishev as a Kates, that he calculated that was the exact moment that they needed to be redeemed, B'chipazon, it had to happen immediately at that point with great speed, because had they passed that threshold, there would have been no remnant left through which for Hashem to fulfill his promise to Avram Avinu, that your descendants, that your children, will Dor Revi'i Yeshuvu Hena, that the fourth generation will be brought out. So they have to be descendants of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. There still has to be a connection. They still have to be the bearers of that Mesorah in order for that there to be that Tzchus. And therefore, that as long as they maintained that identity, they had that connection, that they were still identifiable as the descendants of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, so they still had that tzchus that they could be brought out. So I think that's the same idea that the Maharal is pointing out here, that because Hashem is Zocher Chastei Avos, so he's Mevi Goel Livnei Vineihem, that he brings a redeemer to, that because Hashem remembers the chasadim, the schuyos of the avos, so he brings a goel to their descendants, to the bnei banim, to the people who carry on the legacy of the avos. That the zechus of the avos is the potential that we have because of where we come from. It's the ability that we can carry on the legacy that Avram Avinu brought into the world. It's not just because that we have points stored up in the bank, but it's because we are able to continue on that legacy as long as we identify back to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, so we have the capacity to carry on their mission to bring it out into the world. The Rambam in Chelek Aleph of Moreh Nevuchim explains, he defines there what a lot of different words mean, and gives, you know, the local meaning and then a broader definition of a number of different words. And the Rambam discusses what the idea of a ben is, of a son. And the Rambam says that, you know, the simple idea of a ben means, you know, biological child. But he says that the broader idea of a ben is someone whose hashkafa, who their life outlook was developed by someone else. Therefore, the Talmidim of the Nevi'im are called the Bnei HaNevi'im. They're called literally the children of the Nevi'im. It means there are those who were shaped by the Nevi'im, those who were trained by the Nevi'im, who have their path because of what they learned from the Nevi'im, are called the Bnei HaNevi'im. Similarly, Chazal say that Kol HaMelami La'adam Torah Ki'ilu Yaldo, that anyone who teaches someone Torah, who teaches someone else's child Torah, as if they've given birth to them, because if you have shaped this person, if you've given them the direction in life, so they are in a certain sense your offspring, they're in a certain sense your ben, you've given them the path that they're going on. This is why we refer to someone who lives his life according to Torah values and ideals as a ben Torah. Ben Torah means literally, you know, he's a son of the Torah. It means that he's someone who is shaped and formed and influenced. He has his hashkafa, his path through life is shaped by the Torah. So I say that he's mevi goel livnei b'nehem, that Hashem brings a goel to the people of that Masorah, the people who were shaped by the people who received the Masorah from the Avos. So Kadosh Baruch Hu brings the Redeemer to those who are identified as being the continuation of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Hashem keeps his promise to the Avos through the Banim. And therefore, that it's on the one hand, what Mr. Rudman's saying, certainly correct, that because Hashem made a promise to the Avos, but the reason that promise is carried out through the children is because the descendants, as long as they are still the bearers of that legacy, as long as they're still the ones who are bringing out that message into the world, so it's exactly because of the schus of the Avos, exactly because of the greatness of the message and the idea that they brought into the world, that since we have the capacity to continue bringing out that message, that's why we have that schus.
It's not the impression that one might get just reading the words, that it's the merit of the fathers that saved us. It's not necessarily their merit. It's that we still have a connection to that, and we have the chance to move forward and continue it that makes us deserving of it. That's more that's thanks to us a little bit, not just to them.
Right. It puts a responsibility on us also. Yes. Right. It means that it's the reason we are able to connect to their schus is only because we are still involved in it.
Right. It's still their schus. We just have to do something to be able to tap into it.
Right. So fine, number one. The aside from the we just brought from the Rambam, so the word ben, the word son, comes from the word bone, right? The word ben and the word binyan have really the machlokas rishonim, whether or not there is such a thing as a two-letter shoresh, whether the hey it's part of the Shoresh, whether it's a Shoresh Nofel, the letters that sometimes drop out of the Shoresh. But the word Ben and the word Bone are seemingly, they're very closely linguistically linked words. The son builds on to the edifice provided by his father. Eventually, sometime down the line, we'll discuss, hopefully, about how the word Bina is also related to the idea of, it comes from the word Bone and is related to the same idea of what a ben is, but that the idea that a ben is a binyan, is a building off of the edifice which was provided by his father. So the b'nei b'neihem are those who develop and express the potential given to them by the avos. The Ma'abit in Beis Elokim says, how is it possible that we, he's the Ma'abit speaking, you know, 500 years ago, but how is it possible that we are, you know, in our generation, are going to merit the Geula if there's such a thing as Yiridas Adoros, there's such a thing that every generation is on a lower level than the generation before it, and the earlier, greater generations did not merit, were not Zocha, to bring the Geula, to bring Mashiach, So how are we possibly going to do something that they were unable to do? How are we going to do one better than them and achieve something that they weren't able to reach themselves?
Maybe they were, just Hashem didn't want to. For, you know, running the world is a complicated thing. It's not that simple that you have a certain amount of zechusim, so you're entitled to something, so you get it.
It could be. It would be. It's not impossible, but there is something very difficult you have to explain, which is that Chazal say that any generation in which the Beis HaMikdash wasn't built was as if they destroyed it. So if, you know, it's not my fault. So the Mabit answers, he says, that Geula is a cumulative process. Like, I don't remember if this is his mashal, but like a midget standing on the shoulders of a giant. If you have a giant, so the giant could, you know, because he's very tall, so he can see very, very far. But if someone much smaller than him would get on his shoulders, I guess provided that that person is taller than his head, but let's say stands on his head, right? So that person, even though they're, you know, minuscule, they're negligible compared to the giant, but now that they're on top of the giant, they have everything that he accomplished, plus. So Geula is a cumulative process, and it's because it's not that everything that everyone before us did, just like now that it's over and it's gone. Everything that they did was steps towards Geula, and we build on to that structure built by the generations that came before us. We add the finishing touches, and through that, we were able to, even though the generations before us didn't achieve the Geula, we're not starting from scratch. We're part of a Masorah. We're the next link in the chain and are able to build off of where they left off. There's an old science, I don't know, call it science experiment, science demonstration that the professor gives some students a jar, and he gives them some rocks and some pebbles and some sand, and he says, fill the jar. So first they put in the sand, and then they put in the pebbles, and then they put in the rocks, and it doesn't fit. So then the professor says, here, let me have it. And he puts in the rocks, and then he puts in the pebbles, and then he puts in the sand, and then he opens a can of beer, and he pours in the can of beer. Two important lessons. So the first lesson is that the smaller details, that if the big picture is there first, in the science terms, you know, the rocks, they take up the most space, they can't fit in to the smaller spaces. So if you put in the sand and the pebbles, the rocks are going to go on top, they can't sink in. But if you put in the rocks first, then the pebbles fill in the cracks left by the rocks, and you put in the sand and it fills in the cracks left by the pebbles, and the smaller, more seemingly insignificant portion that comes later, it fills in the gaps that were left. The more significant portion of the jar is filled by the rocks. But it's only if the finer details, which are left to that which is finer, that which is smaller. And the second lesson, of course, is that there's always room for beer. But that's less relevant for us. But that's the idea, that we build up to Geula, that it's a process of building generation after generation, and therefore it's livnei b'neihem, that the sons who are building off of what their fathers added, if we are continuing the Masorah, when we try to the concept of innovation within Judaism is a very complex discussion. You know, we do have the Rav Hirsch's and the Sarah Schneier's and the like of history, but there's always a those who came along and said that what our ancestors were doing was wrong and we need to go a different direction never make it very far. They're never furthering the mission of Judaism. It's only when we are taking, if you see, Yisrael Salanter, who's not saying that the Rajba and the Judaism that he created was wrong. It's that there's a problem that came up now that the Judaism that we have needs to not, don't want to say this in the wrong terms, that we need to make an adaptation in order to make sure that our lives are still tailored to what Judaism wants from us. It's not an innovation to say that, you know, Judaism became out of date and now we need to, and my Rebbeim were wrong and the Masorah that we have is wrong. It's always a question of how can we apply the same Masorah to be most effective in the world that we live in now. But it's only because it's building off of the Masorah, because we're taking the Masorah that we have and going and building off of that, that we're able to bring the Geula. It's because we are taking the entire binyan, the entire structure that we've gotten from generation upon generation of Klal Yisrael, that we can be the midget standing on the shoulders of the giants, and that we could have be the b'nei b'neihem, the bone, the building of adding on to the edifice that we received from our avos to bring the Geula. So just to jump for a moment past what we'll come back to Lama and Shemo in more depth, but just to discuss it very very briefly to get to the next clause. So Hashem brings the Geula. It says Mevi Goel Ivnei V'Nehem Lama and Shemo Be'ahava. So Hashem brings the Geula for the sake of His name. So meaning just to the simple understanding for now, so that His name will be complete. We say that. That as long as, we'll get back to this in more depth, as long as there's an Amalek in the world, that the ain't a shame shalom, ain't a kisei shalom, that Hashem's name is incomplete, and we say that bayom hahu yiyah Hashem echad ushmo echad, that when, on that day, when there's the final revelation, that then Hashem's name will be complete, and His representation in the world will be echad, will be unified. So, this the Hashem brings the Geul Lama'an Shemo, but it's not Lama'an Shemo just in a vacuum. It's Lama'an Shemo bi'ahava, that the purpose of Hashem bringing the Geula is for His name, but not for good PR, not because Hashem needs to have make sure that He's famous, that everybody that He's. It's not for His, not for His reputation. The motivation is out of love for us. The word. The Hebrew word for love, ahava, comes from the root of the word is hav. Rav Dessler talks about this idea in Michta Melio, that the word, the shoresh of the word ahava is the word hav, which means to give, as in ki shem Hashem ekra havu godel elokeinu, that should give greatness, attribute greatness to our God, that Yaakov says, hava li ishti, give me my wife. So the word hav means to give. So the if you really conjugate the word ahava, not to go into the whole grammar of it, but just skip to the word ahava really would conjugate into I will giveness. It's a state of wanting to give to another. So something done be'ahava is something which is done out of a desire to give. So Hashem brings the Geula out of love for us, in order for us to be able to perceive and to appreciate the completeness of His perfection, of His Shlemus, and to be able to enjoy the perfection that we are a part of bringing about. And the revelation of Hashem's complete oneness is therefore understood. It's for our sake. It's Lama'an Shemo. It's for the sake of His name. But it's Ba'ava. That's out of Hashem's Ahava that He wants us to be able to appreciate and to experience that shlemus, that perfection, which we've discussed a number of times before, that the absolute tov is a kadosh baruch hu, and therefore absolute tov is only experienced through a connection to a kadosh baruch hu, and it's through that revelation, through that ability to experience Hashem shlemus, is the greatest act of hatavas, the greatest act of beneficence that can exist, and therefore it's Lama'an Shemo be'ahava, that it's Lama'an Shemo, it's for the sake of Be'yom Uyash Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad, for the totality of that revelation, which is being done for our sake in order that we're able to experience that and we're able to be part of that revelation.
I try to connect this with some of the other things we said, and for His name's sake, if we think of Hashem making both a promise to the Avot for redemption, and the idea that Hashem's name will then be at one point, the whole world will recognize it. So when we say that we recognize His name and we praise His name, we recognize that all we can do is recognize that at some point everybody will recognize that He will be universal. So the idea of His name's sake is that He will fulfill what He intends the world to be, which is to be